Take your Bibles and turn with us this morning to the 49th chapter of the book of Isaiah. 49th chapter of the book of Isaiah. This section of the book of Isaiah will go all the way through chapter 57. We'll go from chapter 49 all the way through chapter 57. And the content of these particular chapters will be talking about the servant, his glory in Zion. So you can kind of see that we're reaching that section as we close out our study on the book of Isaiah, talking about the Messiah, his mission, his kingdom, the church of the New Testament. And when you really stop and look at it, our study through the book of Isaiah started out giving us that ray of light. Because as we said, the book itself, if you just kind of sift through it, you'll say, oh my goodness, this is gloom and doom. But yet there are rays of light that people can look forward to and look forward to as future hope in the glory of the new covenant and, of course, the new spiritual Zion that will replace physical Zion and the new covenant that will replace the old Mosaical covenant that was more a physical covenant to a nation of people than was the new covenant that would include far more people than just one particular nation. Now notice, if you will, when we start out in chapter 9, 49 and at verse 1, one of the first things that we're going to notice is that it says, "Listen, O isles, unto me, and hearken, ye people from far." What do you think that he is beginning to do, or who is he beginning to speak to when he talks to these isles or these people that are from afar?
We're talking to the nations around Judah.
Absolutely. The nations round about. And from a far-reaching standpoint, the future nations that will make up and compose this new covenant, this new Zion, that will replace the old covenant that just included national Israel. You see, that's the reason over the years that the Jews had built up a attitude that if I have Abraham's blood in my veins, because we're his chosen people, and the law is given to us, then we must be a special people, and they were. But they were expected to live a special way. Read the covenant, listen to the covenant, live by the covenant, and teach people that if you do that, you'll be blessed by God. So he begins chapter 49 with basically open the gates or the floodgates, letting people know, you know, it's going to be a different way in the future, but it's going to be good because it's going to be inclusive.
He's not talking to Israel, which would be the Jews. Obviously, he's talking to Gentiles.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's talking to Gentiles and those from afar. Though you'll see through these chapters, in some cases he'll be talking specifically to Israel and Judah. And in some cases, he'll be talking to the future hope of the Gentiles. So when you conclude the fact that he's talking about his servant, which is the Messiah, and his glory and Zion in the future, then you're preparing the way emphasizing to the Jews, the future is going to be different than the past. It's going to be far more inclusive than in the past. Now notice, if you will, as you continue to look at chapter 49 and following, it says, "He hath made my mouth like a sharp sword. In the shadow of his hand hath he hid me. Made me a polished shaft. His quiver hath he hid me. And said unto me, Thou art my servant, O Israel, in whom I will be glorified." So now you can see where he's referencing Israel and saying that you're going to be my servant. You see, it's in Israel that his servant is going to be born of a virgin. It's in Israel, in which before the world was created, God had in his plans to utilize Israel to bring the Son of God into the world. And so he's just kind of basically setting the format for that particular statement. Notice, if you will, in the book of Micah, there is a statement there that he makes similar reference in Micah chapter 4 and at verse 10. Micah chapter 4 and at verse 10. "Be in pain and labor to bring forth, O daughter of Zion, like a woman in travail, for now shalt thou go forth out of the city, and thou shalt dwell in the field, and thou shalt even dwell in Babylon. There shalt thou be delivered, there the Lord shall redeem thee from the hand of thine enemies." Now notice also, if you will, in the fifth chapter, notice how it starts. "Now gather thyself in troops, O daughter of troops. He hath laid siege against us. They shall smite the judges of Israel with a rod upon the cheek. But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me, that is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from old, from everlasting to everlasting." So you see how these prophetic statements that are mentioned in Isaiah as well as other places are basically laying the groundwork so that the Jews can identify that person. When, as Paul would say in Galatians 4:4, when the fullness of time has come, when God allows him to come and be born of a virgin, they can say, yes, that's the Messiah. But instead of them recognizing him as the Messiah, what did they do to him? They crucified him. They rejected him. So by rejecting him, they ultimately rejected his covenant and his kingdom. If you look in the book of Matthew, chapter 2, notice, if you will, how that the New Testament begins by saying this. Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, where is that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. So notice, if you will, there is a little hint there that the Messiah has been born of a virgin, just exactly like Isaiah would say back in chapter 7, and that the wise men were looking. They come to Herod. Of course, Herod is trying to set a trap, you know, for them, so that he can find the Messiah and do what? Kill him. Take his life. Notice as we go on into chapter verse 4 of chapter 49 of Isaiah. Then I said, I have labored in vain. I have spent my strength for naught in vain. Yet surely my judgment is with the Lord, and my work with my God. And now, saith the Lord, that formed me from the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob again to him through Israel, be not gathered, yet shall I be glorious in the eyes of the Lord, and my God shall be my strength. Remember, if you will, when we were studying in the book of John, first thing that said, in the first chapter, you drop down to verse 11, and it makes mention of Jesus coming into the world, and they what? Knew him not. They knew him not. Now this phrase kind of ends in verse 7. Of chapter 49 of Isaiah. He said, it is a light thing that thou shouldest be my servant to rise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the preservation of Israel. Will also give thee for a light to the Gentiles, that thou mayest be my salvation unto the end of the earth. Thus saith the Lord, the Redeemer of Israel, and his Holy One, to whom man despiseth, to him whom the nations abhor, to a servant of rulers. Kings shall see and arise. Princes will worship, because the Lord that is faithful and the Holy One of Israel, and he shall choose thee. You're going to notice in this particular series of chapters, there's going to be emphasis placed in two categories. Number one, as we close out Isaiah and Jeremiah, we're going to begin our study of the 70-year captivity period down in Babylon. And of course, we've already talked about that Isaiah has already 200 years earlier made prophetic work to say that Cyrus is going to be raised up as the king of Persia to deliver the children out of Babylonian captivity and allow them to go back to Jerusalem. That's going to begin a completely new section of study in our Old Testament study. First of all, we've looked at the divided kingdom. Second of all, 70 years of captivity. Then last, we're going to be looking at their return back to Jerusalem and their reestablishing the city and their worship there. Isaiah's going to mention some of that in this section, talking about their redemption in the sense that they were going to be turned loose and given the freedom to go back to Jerusalem, if so be. Now, it seems to be the case that during this 70-year span of time, Many of the Jews fared quite well in Babylon, and in reality decided not to go back to Jerusalem and continued to live in that general location. So you've got Jews now that had been taken into Assyrian captivity, taken over by Babylon. They stayed there. Some Jews taken in captivity by Babylon, they stayed in their foreign homes. But the remnant is who Isaiah is talking about. They're going to go back. They're going to make the choice and they're going back to Jerusalem. And from that remnant is going to come the Messiah. So you see, that's where God, we're talking about the Father, and His Son, the future Messiah, the Christ, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, are being referred to as if Christ were already on earth and in His, and being involved in His earthly ministry. Any questions or comments before we go any further into this chapter? Notice, if you will, then, you pick up in verse 8 of chapter 49. And verses 8 through 13 is going to basically talk about the future salvation of this remnant. Yes, they're going to be salvaged or saved in the sense that they are exiting Babylonian captivity. They're going to be free in that sense. But the real freedom is coming when the Messiah is born of a virgin. When he grows to adulthood, finishes his earthly ministry, dies on the cross, resurrected from the dead, and is back in heaven. That's when the real salvation is to take place. And Isaiah is going to refer to some of that in verses 8 through 13. Notice how it begins. Thus saith the Lord, in an acceptable time have I heard thee, and in a day of salvation have I helped thee, and I will preserve thee and give thee for a covenant of the people to establish the earth, to cause to inherit the desolate heritages, that thou mayest say to the prisoners, go forth; to them that are in darkness, show yourselves. They shall feed in the ways, and their pastures shall be in the high places. Remember, if you will, in the book of 2 Corinthians, later on, Paul, after establishing the New Testament church in Corinth, writes a letter back, the second letter, 2 Corinthians. He makes a statement. He says, now is the day of salvation. Now is the accepted time to hear, believe, repent, obey, and become a New Testament Christian. You see, Isaiah is referencing and referring to that future span of time. Notice how he'll close this section out in verse 13. Sing, O heavens, and be joyful, O earth. Break forth into singing, O mountains, for the Lord hath comforted his people and will have mercy upon his afflicted. Now, yes, he's going to have mercy in the sense that he allows them to leave Babylonian captivity, go back to their homeland. But all the true freedom and the true mercy is going to come in light of the future Messiah. Now, notice, if you will, this goes all the way back to the days of Adam and Eve and the patriarchal system. Because remember, if you will, in chapters 12 through 16, God speaks to Abraham and tells Abraham that all of this is going to take place because of he and his lineage, or through he and his lineage, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And of course, they'll go down into Egypt, and as we would say, here's where we are now based on that. So what the prophet Isaiah is saying, it's inclusive of things in his day, but it's also inclusive of things gone by in the past. The time is rolling along. And here's how it all came to be. Now, notice, if you will, in the book of John, again, that's a section that you'll be very familiar with because we've gone through it twice. In John chapter 12, and I believe it's in verses 20, 23, somewhere along in there. Let's begin in verse 20. There were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. The same came therefore to Philip, which was at Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, "Sir, we would see Jesus." Now, who are we talking about here? I know we're talking about Greeks, but who would the Greeks be? Would they be Jewish? Be Gentile. So they're coming to the Feast of the Tabernacles, or the Feast of the Passover. And what question do they ask Jesus' disciples?
They want to see Christ.
They want to see Christ. They want to see the Messiah. Now notice what he says. Philip cometh and telleth Andrew, and again Andrew and Philip tell Jesus, and Jesus answered them, saying, "The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit." What is he telling or trying to tell his disciples?
They can be resurrected.
All right. And more so than that, he's saying, "Hey guys, it's time for me to die. I've got to die. My mission in doing my Father's will when I left heaven was to come to this earth and ultimately in the end die." And he used the illustration of a grain of corn. You put it in the ground, it dies, and a plant comes forth. And from one grain, hopefully several ears will mature on the stalk. So he's saying, you know, these guys that are wanting to talk to me, more than likely, they're going to be future members of the body of Christ. They're going to respond to your preaching and your teaching when I'm gone. And they're going to be brought into the family of God. They're going to be citizens in new spiritual Jerusalem. Here's something that's quite interesting. And it really applies to our ability to reach people that are lost today. You see, the Jews today are still rejecting Christ, and they are expecting the Messiah to one day come back and resurrect the old law in future Jerusalem. Then on the other extreme, in the religious world today, look what they're teaching. Christ is coming back. Now they differ in who. The Jews will not say he's the Messiah, but the religious world says he's coming back and he's going to settle down in Jerusalem, and he is going to set up an earthly kingdom. in spite of the fact that when he did come the first time, what did he say about his kingdom?
It was not of this world.
It is not of this world. Isn't it unusual how the religious world in general, from a Jewish background, they cannot see the spiritual kingdom? All they can see is a fleshly kingdom. On the opposite extreme, the religious world today, they can't see the spiritual kingdom because they too are looking for an earthly national kingdom. Now, I want you to stop and think, since the time we've started through this study the second time, how much evidence there is, clear, precise evidence, that neither one of these two positions are right or biblical. Because it was in the mind of God before this world was created that the spiritual city had to be established. Spiritual Zion had to come for His Son to reign as King in His kingdom. And it would be an eternal kingdom. So for Abraham's promise to be fulfilled, David's promise to be fulfilled, what happened had to happen. Yes, he had to die. He said he did. He died at the hand of the Jews and the Gentiles. He is coming again. Because he's built mansions for people. But they're going to be faithful people of his kingdom, spiritual Zion, of which he never intended to ever come back for a physical city. We learned that in our divided kingdom study toward the end with Koiniah. Never again. I was reading an article by a gentleman, and he said, you know, in reality, what Jehovah God is saying, old Israel, physical Israel, it's just not large enough. It will not contain and hold all the people, Jew and Gentile alike, over generations and generations that will respond to heaven's invitation. So it's a beautiful note and a beautiful signal that talks about. Now, as we close out chapter 49, we'll start with verse 14 and we'll go all the way through verse 21. And it's basically going to be a statement by Jehovah God acknowledging that Zion will be taken care of spiritually. In other words, this is a compliment to Zion, to national Israel. Can a woman forget her suffering? Would God forget His people, His nation? Look at verse 16. I have graven thee upon the palms of my hand. Thy walls are continually before me. Thy children shall make haste. Thy destroyers and they that made that made thee waste shall go forth with thee. Look at verse 19. Thy waste and thy desolate places, the land of thy destruction, shall even now be too narrow by reason of the inhabitants. What is he saying here about old Zion?
It's going to grow. It's going to expand.
Too small? Too narrow. For the inhabitants, that's going to make it up. Why? Because he's going to bring in the Gentiles alike. Ezekiel would say in Ezekiel chapter 38, I will go into and be over a group of people where there will be no walls. He's talking about physical walls like literal Jerusalem. So notice, if you will, he's basically closing out talking about God's marvelous assurance that Zion, spiritual Zion, is coming. It's going to be a reality. Now, once we enter into chapter 50, you're going to notice that the entire chapter is going to be based on one theme, and that is the servant being a suffering servant and a suffering prophet. And of course, we know that that was reality. Not only did his servants back here, like Isaiah and Jeremiah and all the rest, suffer, but the sinless Son of God would certainly have a suffering life physically. He would be persecuted physically and eventually put to death. Now, chapters 50, and then you go into 51, and here's what this particular chapter is going to kind of refer to. Hearken to me, you that follow after righteousness. Now, how is he singling down his audience? What category does he use to really single down his audience so that we know who he's talking to?
Well, he said those that are righteous, those that are following me.
Absolutely. Charles says those that are following righteousness or following after righteousness. If you're looking under the old covenant, you're talking about those who by faith are looking for the Messiah. If you're talking about the Gentiles, those that have trust in faith in the Scriptures about their future existence and the opportunity to be a part of that physical, spiritual Zion. And in reality, that remnant that he's talked about all along. That remnant that's going to continue to be faithful, trust in God, from which the virgin mother would be found to bring the Son of God. Isn't it amazing? You know, we've seen it done before. How many did we say that of Jacob's group went down into Egypt? 70, 80 people. And they left 400 years later being what? A mighty nation. So God's already done this one time. And here it's talking about, well, you know, he can do it again. He can expand the borders of his kingdom. I wonder sometimes if we really believe that in the power of our prayer. Do we really trust him? He's already said the harvest is what? Why? It's ready to be picked. Do we really in our prayers, when we're praying to God, do we seek those that we can come in contact with? That are ready to accept the teaching of the Bible? We have witnessed they're out there because they're in our presence. But do we really trust and believe it enough to, from the depths of our heart, when we're petitioning God, send us those people? In spite of the pandemic that we're involved in, help us to come in contact with those people that would make and are searching for New Testament Christianity.
That's why this virus was a perfect storm. Most times, a situation like this, people would run to the church.
That's true.
You know,
That's so true. Notice, if you will, 51 is going to talk about the future nation of Israel, spiritually speaking. Verses 9 through 16. He's going to be appealing to that remnant. Awake, awake, he says. Verse 11. The redeemed of the Lord shall return and come with singing into Zion, everlasting joy upon their head. Remember, two things. Yes, it's talking about going back to Babylon. I mean, from Babylon to Jerusalem. But it's also talking about that future singing. When one comes up out of that watery grave, have you noticed the expression on most people's face when they come out of that water? And they know they've been born again. They know that they've been forgiven of their sins, that they've been added to the body of Christ. They're in His kingdom. They're happy. They're uplifted. They have assurance. That's what He's going to talk about in verses 9 through 16. And then 17 through 20. Awake, awake, stand up, O Jerusalem, which has drunk the hand of the cup of His fury. In other words, He's saying, look, folks, you need to wake up. You caused me to become so angry. You've had to drink the cup of my fury, but it's over. I'm going to allow you to go back to your homeland. I'm going to allow you to not only go back to old Jerusalem, but I'm going to allow you the opportunity to be a part of spiritual Jerusalem. We'll stop there, pick up on chapter 52 later.